This is Buddy Guy, Junior Wells, drinking TNT and smoking dynamite. Resistance Radio with a Resistance Blues song. Junior Wells and Buddy, Chicago, Illinois. It is a low-down dirty shame. We're going to deal with some resistance and some blues this morning, y'all. That's Junior Wells on the harp, y'all. Behind Herr Fuhrer, the Orange Fuhrer speech last night. If you ain't got the blues behind that, something's wrong. But we gonna do something about it, y'all. It is a low-down dirty shame. Here we are. Here we are, Herr Trump. That's why we call Epic Radio the Rock of Appalachia. And the blues of the Blue Ridge. We're going to talk about 32 Trump staffers got the blues behind their firing in the last 2 weeks.
Reminds me of the 32-30 blues.
All right. 32-30 blues. Drinking TNT. Oh, that's 32-30. That one, drinking TNT and smoking dynamite. That's great. You're listening to the Rock of Appalachia on Epic Radio, Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio. If you want to call in, the number is 304-885-0708. 304-885-0708. The Rock of Appalachia, everybody. Thanks for joining us this morning on Resistance Radio. We got lots to talk about today. We have a great, extremely interesting guest on today, Brother Gene Bruskin. I go back to Gene back to 1988 and Reverend Jesse Jackson's run for the presidency. That's when we first met and worked together. And we've worked off and on together for years and years, decades now. And he's going to be on in just a few minutes. But we got a lot to talk about. We got to start with the orange dummy speech last night, or the, as Fred Sanford would say, you big damn dummy. So we got to talk about that and what a disaster that was for all of us. We also have to talk about, we really got to deal with a little bit of a tepid response from our side last night. I didn't see the speech. I read about it on the internet last night and this morning, been reading about it all morning. Understood that Van Jones, of all people, one of our mainmost folks, was in the Obama White House, former community organizer, started crying on CNN because Trump gave some honor, which was much deserved, to the Navy SEAL who was killed in the botched raid on Yemen. Let's just remember, folks, the man was killed on the botched raid on Yemen because the mission should not have gone forward. We didn't have enough intelligence on it. We weren't ready. It was Trump's first call in terms of defense of the nation. And he wasn't even in the Situation Room watching the cameras and watching the video from the raid. He was tweeting. Can't imagine a president not being in the Situation Room on something of that importance. A young girl, American citizen of Arab descent, was killed in that raid. And civilians, we don't even know how many civilians were killed. It was a terrible, terrible thing, and it was a silly thing, and it shows the lack of maturity of the orange dummy, the big damn dummy, with not waiting until the information was complete and comprehensive. The military and the special forces were ready to go forward. It was just a disaster. And so last night, Trump went before the Congress, and they said he did a pretty good job reading the teleprompter. That's a little, what, John Case?
Let's give him his due.
I'm just saying, that's kind of a low bar for the president.
I can read. It's not true what you heard. I can read. I'd like to give America a box of chocolates.
It is kind of a low bar for the president of the United States, the most powerful man on earth, that he can read from a teleprompter and stay on message, which I guess he did last night. But, folks, let's also remember two other things. This presidency is a disaster for the United States. We are playing with fire. We are messing with fascism. The president is a fascist. His closest advisor is a fascist. They are acting as fascists and authoritarians do. He's going to cut social spending. That's already been cut, and he's going to cut it again to give 10% more of the budget to the military. Lord have mercy. The one thing we don't need in America is more spending on the military. We outspend everybody, almost everybody in the world combined, and we don't need to up that anymore. Lord, if we use what we had now, it would be a total worldwide conflagration if we use just what we have now. We don't need to do that. But let us also remember the resistance is working. Lord have mercy. Thousands and thousands of Americans at congressional town hall events in the last week and a half. Thousands and thousands of Americans, average Americans, regular folks, folks like you and me, regular working people showing up at congressional offices and saying, do not repeal Obamacare. Don't take health care away from 20 million people. We got to get behind that fight, y'all.
And we heard this morning, 600,000 West Virginians.
600,000 West Virginians.
Just on Medicaid.
Just from the Medicaid expansion.
And if all of it's canceled, 800,000.
Lord have mercy.
You know what the workforce is in West Virginia?
What is it,
John? 800,000.
Wow. Brothers and sisters, friends and neighbors, this is Stuart Acuff with Resistance Radio, with my great friend John Case, engineering for me and pitching in and helping out. John is the president, founder, and chief cook of Epic Radio, Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio, emanating, coming at you from West Virginia's Eastern Panhandle, this little hotbed of progressivism. We're coming right out of Shepherdstown, West Virginia, Paris on the Potomac, one of the most beautiful places in America. But we're broadcasting to people all over the country. Last week, we had folks from Israel and Turkey on listening. We know we have people all over the country listening in. And we're happy to have you with us. I think my friend Pat Lavin from IBEW Local 47 in San Diego is listening in. And maybe my buddy John Murphy from Tennessee with IBEW is listening in. And others, we hope, are listening in. Maybe my buddy Peter Olney from the West Coast Longshoremen is listening in. But people all over America and some folks all across the globe are listening in this morning to what we have to say about the resistance, the global resistance to the orange dummy, Donald Trump. And, you know, folks, there might be some people who take exception to me making fun and ridiculing this supposed president. But please remember, ridicule and irreverence is critical to resistance. He doesn't deserve our respect. He doesn't deserve the honor. He doesn't deserve the privilege of the presidency of the United States, and we can't give him what he don't deserve. We're awful glad to have y'all with us this morning. Later in the show, we're going to go down the entire list of 32 White House staff and members of the Trump administration who've either been fired or summarily escorted from the White House by the Secret Service because of failing background checks and failing security checks and engaging in malfeasance and spying on behalf of Russia and the whole nine yards. I wrote this in this week in on the Epic blog. Donald Trump is the highest placed mole in the history of the United States. Donald Trump is a Russian intelligence asset. Gene Bruskin.
Hey, Stuart, how are you?
I'm good, brother. Y'all, this is Gene Bruskin from Silver Spring, Maryland, calling in. He's our guest today. We're awful glad to have him on. I go back, as I was saying earlier, I'm going to ask you to help me put together your resume because I've got some of it in my mind, but not all of it. I think, Gene, you and I met in 1988 when Reverend Jackson was running for president. Isn't that the truth?
Yeah, that's probably the first time we crossed paths.
Yeah.
I think we crossed paths in about 91 when I was down in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Helping with some organizing, and you came in with a group of folks. And then in 91,
you remember why I came to New Orleans in 92 or 91? That was when David Duke was running for governor.
And you had a group of people with you. I just can't remember what the mission was.
That was when David Duke was running for governor. And we brought 40 people, 50 people down from Atlanta to door knock in the African-American communities of New Orleans with a get out the vote message. And we won that fight. You remember the motto of that that fight, vote for the crook, it's important?
Yes, yes, which got everybody's attention.
Right.
Unfortunately, we kept that racist out.
Yeah, we did. We elected the crook, but he was a good crook. He was our crook.
Yeah.
Edwin Edwards.
It's all relative, you know what I mean?
It is all relative. And then Gene and I became very close friends and brothers during the Atlanta Labor Council's campaign against Newt Gingrich when Gene came to Atlanta with Reverend Jackson and
Al Sharpton.
Reverend Al Sharpton. And was
it
that
was,
when
it
we
was one of Reverend Sharpton's first real labor marches in his life, really.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was 95. We marched for 3 days from the nightmare to the dream. We marched from the middle of Newt Gingrich's district there in Cobb County to Dr. King's gravesite in downtown Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And Gene and I spent 2 weeks together, almost joined at the hip, making that thing happen.
Yeah.
It was a great 3 days. Great 3 days. And now, so what did you do? Well, how long were you with Reverend Jackson, Gene?
I was with him for 2 years, starting with the pre-Clinton election days, and I stayed on and helped him develop at that point he had the National Rainbow Coalition headquarters in Washington, D.C., and we developed rainbow labor effort that included a really 2-day march with you down in Atlanta with some striking print shop workers whose jobs were being replaced. And that was another big effort. And then I left from there and went over to the, what was it, part of the AFL-CIO, Food and Allied Service Trades Department.
Where you became a print.
Spent about 10 years there on a whole bunch of different kind of campaigns. And then...
That was when you became not only a great organizer, but a premier researcher. You became one of the top researchers in the country, finding leverage to use against bad employers.
Yeah, I was a student of the best, you know, Jeff Fiedler. and the theory was, and still is, that it's such an uneven playing field. As many of us know in our country, that if workers are going to get in a fight, they need all the information about the employer that you can possibly gather, because the employer knows everything about you, you know, and you can't fight him in ignorance. And so we, you know, under Jeff's leadership, we developed that to a science, and we're able to really back up. It never replaces the fight of the workers on the ground.
No,
you know, and some unions have made that mistake to think that you can do it like an air war and get the workers. But it's a tremendous help.
Right. It is a tremendous help. And it's about leverage on the employers. It's about going after their boards of directors. It's about going after their vendors. It's about going after their customers and clients. It's about talking about justice to the people who matter the most to the employer. And that's pretty simply what it is, right?
Yes, yes. And it makes a difference, because sometimes the workers are fighting sometimes even in a small part of a giant employer's business, and they can't beat them there. And so you have to go after the whole employer's operation and make it clear to that employer that there's a cost to denying people their rights.
Right. And how long were you with FAST, and where'd you go from there, Gene?
Well, I was there from 95 all the way through 2006. From there, I went on loan to the Food and Commercial Workers Union, UFCW, and spent 3 years working on the Justice at Smithfield campaign.
Right.
Where you did North Carolina, and we won.
And where you did fantastic work, brother, both the research end of it and the community pressure end of it.
Thank you. It was such an honor for me to be a part of this thing. These are 5,000 mostly African-American and Latino workers in rural Southeast North Carolina, where unions were virtually non-existent, and against a gigantic employer. And these folks are killing 32,000 hogs a day, Stuart.
That's hogs, y'all.
It's hard to ask people to come to a union meeting, but they came.
That's hogs, y'all, not hogs. It's hogs in North Carolina and Tennessee. Hogs. Gene can't hardly wrap his mouth around that.
Is it true in hog? Excuse me. This is John Kasich. Is it true that in hog production there's nothing left but to squeak?
A little bit of hair.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they say that they own the pig from the squeal to the meal.
All right, there you go. Okay, that's even better. There you go, the squeal to the meal.
Every single thing that you can do with every part of the body. Some of it goes into cosmetics.
Some of it goes into insulin, right? You know, I mean, isn't the insulin that I take on a daily basis basically pig insulin? I think it is.
Yeah. Yep.
So. Yeah.
Well, that was a wonderful campaign. How many workers got their union there?
5,000 workers.
Whoa.
Mega campaign, especially in the private sector.
They started it in the early 1990s, and the company, every time they tried a regular election, the company just violated the law and stalled in court. So we decided to have a broad campaign where we took the stories of the workers and the workers themselves out across the country to where the Smithfield products were and let them tell their stories. And the company decided that their name was getting associated with abuse. And that they had to settle this thing.
It was getting associated with abuse. And so Gene
and that was the goal.
Gene and his partners at the United Food and Commercial Workers, who represent your local supermarket employees at Kroger and Aldi's and Safeway and other shops as well. Gene and his friends and brothers, colleagues at the United Food and Commercial Workers and FAST connected two of the things that two of the things we find most valuable here at Epic Radio, the Rock of Appalachia, y'all, the Rock of Appalachia. Storytelling and organizing. And they blended those two things in a powerful combination. A little bit later, then I'm sorry, I keep wanting to get ahead of myself, Gene. I'm sorry. And so what'd you do after Smithfield? And let me just say on a little side note, you know, for those of us from the South and everybody who listens to this show all across America and indeed in other parts of the world knows that I'm from rural West Tennessee in the Boot Hill of Missouri, the part of Missouri that sticks down into Arkansas. And I never said this to Gene. You know, I grew up country, and my mother was a great country southern cook, soul food cook. And the meat that Smithfield made was southern pork. I mean, they made big, fat slices of bacon, hickory-smoked bacon and ham. And great sausages, and doggone it, damn it. We can say damn because this is internet radio.
you can say other things, too.
Right. Well, we can say, fuck the orange dummy. That's one thing we can
say. However, I want you to know that there are family members listening.
There may be some. But
there may be some middle schoolers that are...
No, they're in school now.
They're supposed to be.
Yeah, they're supposed to be. But I had to quit eating that good meat they made while Gene and them worked on Smithfield and had to switch to Oscar Mayer. Man, I was glad to get back to Smithfield after that struggle was over. Where'd you go from there, Gene?
Fortunately, a lot of people joined you and switched, and the company company actually went to court and claimed that we cost them $96 million.
Wow, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think we were quite that successful, but it was good to hear that. Hear them saying that anyway, you know.
So where'd you go from there, Gene?
Well, after the campaign concluded, what was sort of the residue of the FAST organization had changed its name and essentially, for a variety of reasons, dissolved. And Jeff took half of the staff, Jeff Fiedler, went to the operating engineers. I took the other half, and we started a department at the National Office of the American Federation of Teachers to help the teachers figure out how to deal with the huge amount of private intervention in health and education. All the charter schools, the vouchers, all the billionaires that were trying to, quote, fix things for poor children, supposedly, and they just didn't have that expertise. And so we set up a strategic campaigns department at the AFT to help them figure out who it was and what they were up to and how to resist that. Philadelphia was certainly one of the ground zeros in that fight, too.
Well, they ruined the school system in Philadelphia. The right wing and the charter school industry, they ruined the school system in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. It's a tragedy. A city with that much culture and with that places such a high value on intellectualism, you know, five great universities and learning and books, and with such a great progressive, even radical African-American tradition and immigrant tradition, and they ruined the school system.
A proud working class industrial history.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. A great city, and they ruined the school system. And the people who paid the biggest price were the children of African-American workers and the African-American middle class, because they couldn't buy their way into a private school. And so then, Gene, what was the next step?
Well, I turned 65, and I'd been doing this since 1977, and I decided to retire. It actually turned out more like being redeployed.
John Case and I know that story.
Going to work every single morning. And,
yeah, I heard that, buddy.
Made some choices about what I do with my
job. You know, this is John. I retired here in 2003, or 5, basically. Uh-huh. Kind of halftime. And the minute you tell anybody in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, that you're retired, I didn't say retard, I said retired, you get appointed to a committee.
Right.
I mean, because the town runs on volunteers. I mean, it doesn't have any budget, right? So, except for the mayor and the chief of police, that's about it. And I found myself. I got to get up at 5 o'clock every morning, you know. Now, and I hadn't done that since the days I was off leaving in plants. So, it's a rude awakening at 70.
Once people know that there's somebody that can make things happen. Who is available? Everybody wants you.
I know our good friend Dr. Zaki McGill came to town as a doctor who made enough money to retire. Okay, early, and here's this highly skilled, very articulate, you know, very kind of conscious and African American doctor appears in town, and you know, I remember I was attending an NAACP meeting when I first went here with Zaki, and they looked at him, and I could just see. Future president of the United States coming from our community right here. You know, a man, they grabbed a hold of him and gave him about 40 assignments. You know, it was amazing.
Welcome to West Virginia. West by God, Virginia. Look, I got a few more things to say about Gene in way of introduction. Then we're going to talk about the resistance. Then, I'm going to ask Gene to make some comparisons for us between Reverend Jackson's campaign and Senator Sanders' campaign, and how Senator Sanders has followed through. And then we're going to talk about culture and the American working class. Gene's a playwright. As I said on Facebook, Gene's a playwright, a scholar, and an organizer. He played basketball at Princeton University. And I'm not a bad playground player. I played against Gene, and I could tell he played Division I basketball. He's tough on the court, tough with the ball. Was actually on the same team for a year with Bill Bradley, later United States Senator and all-star forward for the New York Knicks. I think you once told me that Senator Bradley helped recruit you, Gene.
He did. I was. I played high school ball in Upper Darby, just outside of Philly.
Yeah, I know our Upper Darby.
Yeah, and we had an amazing coach. In my junior year, we contended for the state champion. We lost to the state champ, and Princeton had sent somebody to the game. You know, and they asked me if I was interested, and coming from the working class background I came to, Going to Princeton was not really on my list. I never thought it would be possible. But so immediately I jumped at a chance and drove up there with my father. And they brought me over, the coach Van Bredekoff brought me over to Cottage Club, which is a Tiger Club, excuse me. They have these elite eating clubs. And bring me upstairs, and there's Bill Bradley playing pool. And I'm sitting there like, at that point, Bill Bradley was on the front cover of Time magazine. He was a future president in everybody's eyes.
Not to mention Sports Illustrated.
Players in history.
Right.
And I'm standing there just shivering and shaking, you know. And he says, you know, Gene, I think we'd like you to come play basketball, Princeton. What do you think? And I'm like, okay. You know?
So that's why that was it. You know? That's why we call Gene a scholar, a playwright, and an organizer. We love organizers on this show, and potentially organizers who have an artistic and creative side. Gene, so we want to shift to the resistance. Want to talk about your play, and I'm going to end probably after you're off the air. I just want to remind our listeners, running down the list of 32 Trump employees, White House and Trump administration employees, who have already been fired, most of them escorted from the White House by the Secret Service. I've got the names. I'm gonna tell y'all who they were and what they did and how many were involved in the Russian spy operation. Air Trump, the orange dummy, is the highest placed mole in the history of the United States. He definitely is a Russian intelligence asset. An asset is either a double agent, a mole, or somebody that the host country thinks is bribable or blackmailable. And, of course, Trump is both of those things. And we're going to go down the list. But now I want to switch to our resistance. So, Gene, I want your thoughts. We've had a great week and a half of town hall meetings and congressional office demonstrations. The resistance is increasing, not decreasing. We've taken on movement status. A lot of this is getting done spontaneously at the grassroots. People are organizing themselves, not organically, not waiting for directions from the top, not waiting to be told what to do or asked what to do. People are stepping up and stepping out. And we celebrate them every Wednesday at 10 o'clock on the Rock of Appalachia, Resistance Radio. So talk a little bit about what you see in terms of the resistance, Gene.
Well, I think this is clearly, in my lifetime, this is a unique moment. Beyond what happened during the Ronald Reagan era, and we're only 1 month into this, but what's different now that hasn't always been there is that the resistance developed immediately once the election happened, and it's really broad waves of people participating in this thing. And that's a really encouraging thing to everybody. I was in the Women's March here in D.C. and really...
John and I were too.
I can't... Hundreds of demonstrations, but this was one of the... maybe the biggest, and I couldn't march for the most part because wherever you went, it was just huge numbers of people, lots of young people, fairly diverse. And so I think the challenge now is to keep this going, to figure out how to focus it, to make sure that the different parts of the movement don't keep siloing ourselves, you know, the labor movement and the immigrant rights movement and the women's movement movement against mass incarceration and so on. We need to link our movements because they're all united in the policies of the Congress and the President of the United States and his billionaire cabinet. So we have to fight those kind of fights that way. And I think it's very encouraging that the wake of what Bernie Sanders showed was possible has not gone away. And
right.
I give him a lot of credit, but I give the people credit who learned in that experience and are putting it to good use.
It's really, really exciting. Did you see the speech last night, Gene?
I watched a little bit of it. I really couldn't tolerate it, you know,
because
I knew that he was going to say the same terrible things, but he was going to have a teleprompter, and so he was going to say them more elegantly, than he generally does. And I figured I would just catch the highlights afterwards. But I know what he said. I read about it.
Tell me what you think about it. I've been a little disappointed in the reaction. Some of our folks have been real strong in their reaction, but others haven't. In fact, Van Jones, somebody who's very important to us and who I thought we'd be able to count on absolutely on something like this, he was at one point last night shedding a tear because of the way Trump talked about the Navy SEAL who was killed in the Trump botched raid in Yemen. So give us some more reactions that you had on the speech.
Well, I think that he's a TV personality, right? So he obviously has used his charisma to get as far as he's gotten. So, you know, he put on the charm, and he touched that button of the Navy SEAL having died. When in fact, if you were to step back for a minute and look at the catastrophe of what's happening in that small country of Yemen, where hiding behind the Saudi Arabian aircraft, and which we support and provide intelligence with, hundreds of thousands of Yemeni people, civilians, are dying, being displaced, having their homes blown up. And so that's really the context of what happened. And this guy was sent on a mission, you know, that was had nothing to do with helping the people of Yemen,
right.
Really. And
right.
he certainly had all the good intentions. I certainly don't fault him.
Mm-hmm.
But really, it's a disgrace. It's really
right.
a disgrace what's happening there, and that this guy had to die for. And I think now he wants to increase the troops on the ground. There's going to be more people dying for causes that cannot be resolved through the methods, the military.
Well, you know, let me make a point here real quick, because you heard it first on Resistance Radio, on Epic Radio, Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio, coming at you from Shepherdstown, West Virginia. There's fixing to be a war. We're going to invade somebody. John Case and I have been talking about this for a month now. Trump is not going to be able. His numbers are dropping too fast. The Congress is pissing themselves every day about blowing up Obamacare after this week and a half of citizen protest, of movement action and activity across America. The Republican members of Congress are pissing themselves about destroying Obamacare. And Trump is gonna hear the song of the siren, just like George Bush did. And we're going to lose trillions of dollars and thousands of lives in another military escapade somewhere. You heard it first on Epic Progressive Radio, Radio Resistance, Resistance Radio. You think I'm right, Gene?
Well, I think he's setting it up for that. You know, for one thing, you know, this sort of his appetite for anger and hatred and blame of all Latinos and in this case of Muslims, where you have over a billion Muslims in the world, you know, in dozens of countries. And when you demonize them every day in the United States, you fuel that kind of movement that ISIS is trying to build
right.
in other parts of the world. He's recruiting for them.
Right.
And, and he's undermining the solidarity of our own country and our own security. And one of the most insecure things about people in our country is that we don't have health care.
Right.
And we started getting it at least a little bit under Obama, and he wants to take that away. And ultimately, it's going to really hurt people a lot. And I think he's going
to kill people
dramatically. But the question is, how much damage will he do in the meantime? And that's why we got to resist all the outrageous policies that he's putting forward in every way that we can.
Let me remind our listeners, and we're fixing to switch gears here in a minute, but let me remind our listeners of the Capitol switchboard. It's 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. That's how to call. That's the Capitol switchboard. That's how to get in touch with your member of Congress and your United States senators. And we want you to wear those phones out every day. Call about a different issue. Call them, tell them what your zip code is. Tell them you're a voter in their district or their state, and tell them you don't like what's going on and you've had enough of it. I called the National Security Council Monday and told them I didn't want no part of Steve Bannon going on the National Security Council. every day I got to ask you to do one or two or three or four things. Number one, call the Capitol. Tell somebody, your senators or your member of Congress, that you don't like what Trump and the Congress are trying to do to us. They're trying to cut Social Security. Listen to me now, y'all. If you haven't retired yet, they're going to raise your retirement age if we let them. They want to privatize Medicare and Medicaid, and they want to destroy Obamacare. They want to throw 20 million Americans off health care rolls, and they want to kill people, average people, regular folks. It's that serious.
He just announced that he's adding $55 billion to the military budget, which is bigger than the next seven countries' budget in the world. And he's going to take that from other programs.
Right.
So what programs? $55 billion, you're going to take down a lot of programs. It's going to hurt a lot of people so that we could build more weapons. And he doesn't even have a plan yet where he'd even spend that money. He just is going to militarize solutions, just like he tries to policeize the immigration situation in this country. And there's nothing about love, kindness, fairness, solidarity, decency, respect, dignity. These are not terms.
Justice, righteousness, nothing about those things. Compassion, love. You know, Woody Guthrie said there's only one definition of God in the Bible. You know what that is, Gene?
John Case?
God is love. John wants to say something other than affiliating himself with the divine.
Yeah, right. That's right. When God calls you, he calls me too. So Stuart and I were speculating this morning on exactly when Trump goes to visit all the generals about his plans to invade any one of six countries that he's threatened. I think it's seven, actually, now. Mm-hmm. We were speculating. Now, where can he go? Now, I don't think he can go to Syria because he already gave that to Putin.
Right.
And
there ain't much left in Syria.
And even though Netanyahu would love for him to bomb Iran, I don't think he's going to do that either, actually, because I think Iran's a little too powerful to put down. All right. And then we came up, so I think Stewart's idea was Yemen, because it's small, bite-sized, militarily, probably wouldn't be a difficult chew.
Walk in the park.
Even though our record for setting up governments after we chew something up is not too good. But nonetheless, I think there's no political gain for him by going to Yemen. All of his friends and supporters, I don't think they give a crap about Yemen. I think he has to invade Mexico. Mm-hmm. That's what I think he has to do.
Invade Mexico.
Right, because that'll solve the immigration problem.
It'll look like it's solving the immigration problem.
And that, you know, that's just one of his, that and government dysfunction are the two biggest polling things, I'm told by Gallup, he has in his favor.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the folks, let me remind you, the resistance is critically important for the soul and the future of the United States of America. Trump is a fascist. His top advisor is a fascist. His government is running like an authoritarian regime. And if you love democracy, if you love freedom, you have no choice but to put your shoulder to the wheel of resistance, as Americans have throughout our history, from the war for independence through the struggle against slavery and a great war, 650,000 killed in the Civil War, to the fight for women's rights, to the fight against legalized segregation and Jim Crow, to the fight for the American labor movement, and the fight for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered people, their freedom, and the fight for the environment, and the fight for women's rights. If you believe in any of those things, you got to put your shoulder to the wheel of resistance. Remember, Trump is a fascist. He's an un-American fascist. He is a mole for Russia. He is guilty of treason. And as long as the Republican Congress postpones and filibusters against a real investigation, they are complicit. Mitch McConnell, your ass is complicit in treason. Little monster boy Ryan, your ass is complicit in treason. But now, Gene, I want to switch gears. Yeah.
All right.
Does that mean down the road we're going to have some public executions?
We might. You can't never tell.
We're going to have a festival. Are we going to have a festival of the oppressed?
In 1850, you couldn't expect we were going to have a great civil war, so you don't know.
Well, you know, I remember very clearly that, you know, one of the big debates in Russia after the revolution, or after before, actually, was whether, you know, if you took power, what was going to have to happen to the Tsar, all right?
Right.
And it was, everybody was fine with sort of just taking all their money away until the issue of the what should the government be? Should it be a Duma? Remember the Duma, right, had been set, yeah, up. Problem with the Duma legislation was that it recognized the Tsar as the one who legalized the Duma. Right. All right, so it caused a big split, and they finally decided that, you know, they came to what it was Lenin at the time and said, "We got to kill the Tsar."
Right.
Okay, and he said, "Well, and why?" And they said, well, you know, if we don't, they're going to endlessly claim that they own the government, and then that, you know, they'll just be interfering for everything. We won't have any legitimacy. And he said to them, the kind of government you guys are talking about set up, they're not going to recognize as legitimate anyway. You know, it's not going to do you any good to kill them. But they overruled him when they went out and shot him, and then it didn't do him any good. They still had 13 nations invade him, so... you know.
Well, I'm not saying we're going to have to kill the
so I'm worried about these executions.
Wannabe emperor, but he is a fascist and he is a traitor. Gene, let's move on.
What's that island they sent Napoleon to?
Elba. They almost sent him to New Orleans.
Can we get an...
There's a great restaurant in the building they built for him in New Orleans called the Napoleon House. Gene, John, I got to get off this.
Go ahead. I just want to know the aim of the island. We're going to put Trump
Elba
on when we're done.
Elba or Helena?
Elba. Or we could find a Mediterranean island maybe that would be a little hotter?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah,
all right.
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely.
All right. I'm sorry. I'm all done. Thank you.
All right. Texas. We can send him to South Texas. Gene, tell me about your play.
Well, when I retired or got redeployed, I've still been doing some work with unions, but I decided to do something, you know, that had sort of been a little bit of a dream of mine for quite a few years. I did a little community theater before I ended up in the labor movement. And I started playing around with the idea of writing a play for and about workers. You know, because I feel like as you build a movement and the kind of movement we need now, you need culture. And most of our culture has been commercialized and is sold to us, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so I grew up on musicals, you know, when I was younger, you know, Fiddler on the Roof and My Fair Lady and all. So I started, you know, I got this idea for a story, and one thing led to another, and I got some help and eventually created a musical called Pray for the Dead, a musical tale of morgues, moguls, and mutiny.
Wow.
And put a play together and showed it this last summer for a bunch of different unions in the area. And now it's being played on a lot of public radio shows in a radio version of it. And I'm, you know, trying to continue getting it produced and getting it out there. Actually, and for folks that are interested, if you go to PrayForTheDeadMusical.com, PrayForTheDeadMusical.com, there's pictures and music and, you know, background. But it's been very exciting to see people's response when they actually, as you guys probably know and most people realize, theater at this point in history has sort of become like opera for the average working person, you know, the average cashier,
live theater,
bus driver, janitor. Yeah. You just don't go to theater.
Right.
It's too expensive. That's for somebody else. So this is theater for the average worker. I call it theater for the 80%, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm taking it to people, and it's a great experience.
Now, tell me...
It's a lot of fun.
Tell me and John how we would broadcast that on Epic Radio, The Rock of Appalachia. Because I know you want you want us to broadcast
it. There's a couple ways to do it, but there is, on the website, there is a link, there's a little bit of an interview I did in the beginning, but you just go past that and just click on the link. Through the computer, there it is. You know that, and it's a 30-minute show that is essentially, I took the full play, created a short narrative that connects all the songs.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get a sense of the story, you get a sense of the music and the humor. It's really, it's about an uprising led by a group of morgue workers that mm-hmm. ends up in a takeover against corporate and political corruption in an unknown country. So it could be ours, and it could be Brazil, could be Greece, could be anywhere.
Right, right. And Gene, talk if we're getting close on time, but talk if you will about writing for the working class. You know, I've written two books and a whole bunch of poems. Right. Got about four dozen of the poems published, and two more just got accepted this past weekend. And that's real close to my heart. Talk about your experience in writing for the working class and your thoughts on that.
Well, I think it's really important what you're doing, Stuart, because if you look at who owns the movie theaters and who owns the radio stations, the main radio, big radio stations, and who owns the TV stations and the newspapers, it's mostly owned by a bunch of billionaires.
Right.
And so the image that the average working person has of ourselves is the image that is sort of permitted and encouraged by people who are trying to make money on these vehicles. So it's really important that somebody who comes from the working class, somebody who identifies with and who knows the working average working person, presents something that's meaningful to them. So when we did this play this summer, for example, people saw themselves up there, you know. People actually sitting in the audience, we did it for like hospital workers and factory workers and bus drivers. And people saw themselves up there. When the boss was up there cheating people, they're yelling at them. They're acting like a union meeting instead of, they weren't being polite like in some fancy theater.
Right.
You know?
They're great.
And this was a history that we had. We did a tremendous amount of this theater in the 30s.
That uh-huh.
was really popular.
Mm-hmm.
But after World War II, when commercial culture developed and anti-communism of the McCarthy era wiped out a lot of progressive writers for blacklisted and so on, it didn't disappear. There are definitely examples of it that have continued, but it's sort of gotten sparse, and I'm trying to sort of help encourage that we pick it up and keep it going.
Brothers and sisters, friends and neighbors, residents of the Eastern Panhandle of West Virginia, listeners to Independent Radio, Epic Radio, Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio at www.enlightenradio.org. Listeners to The Rock of Appalachia. This is critically important. Gene, are you on Facebook?
I've been looking for you. We have a Pray for the Dead site on Facebook as well.
Okay.
My site is very underdeveloped.
What's the Pray for the Dead site? Is it just called
Pray for the Dead Musical?
Pray for the Dead Musical. And by the way, brothers and sisters, friends and neighbors, my site is not underdeveloped. It's overflowing with poems and posts and political commentary and analysis and just about everything else. So feel free to friend me, Stuart Acuff, on Facebook. I maintain about 5,000 friends, so you may have to squeeze a little bit to get in there, but I'd sure like to have you on my site. And now, how do we find the link, Gene? Go over that one more time.
It's www.prayforthedeadmusical.com.
You go on there.
It's a sort of a simple site, but you can read about the play. On the left-hand column, there's a little bit about the radio show. If you click on it, you can actually listen to the show.
Great.
There's a section across the top you can click on, and you can get pictures, and you can look at some videos of the production. You can learn quite a bit about it, and anybody that's interested in putting this play on in their community should just contact me, and you can do that through the site as well. And there's a couple groups in different parts of the country I'm working with now that are looking to put it on as part of their community organizing effort.
That's wonderful. This, brothers and sisters, is my friend and your friend, your brother in arms, your comrade, Gene Bruskin, Bruskin, scholar, playwright, organizer. We've been so happy to have you. Gene, if you need to jump off, please. This is a good jumping off place. We're gonna do your play on Epic Radio, either on my show or in radio theater. We do a lot of radio theater in the afternoon because we're on 24/7 here at Epic Radio. Excellent. We're gonna have a podcast.
We can be in touch on that, and I really appreciate it's an honor really to be on your show and
thank you, Gene, the work
that you've done all your life and
thank you,
the
brother.
Message that. You continue to give. It's more important than ever, Stuart, what you're doing.
Thank you, Brother Gene. Thank you, my friend and brother. We're going to let you go now, Gene. We're going to do your play. We'll be in touch on that. Stay on the radio station if you want to. I'm going to go over this great list of folks who've been summarily fired, had security clearances denied them, and caught up in Russiagate with the biggest, highest place mole in the history of the United States, our own orange dummy president. So, Gene, if you've got another 5 minutes, you can stay on. We might have something to say here at the end, but if you've got to go, feel free to go. The first one, brothers.
Unfortunately, I got to go.
Okay, brother. Thank you.
We
appreciate you an awful lot.
Thank you, and it's a pleasure meeting you, John.
Yes, thank you. So the first one, I got this from a little news site on the internet called Palmer Report. I read that every morning. The first one who had to go was General Michael Flynn, who was supposed to be the national security advisor. He was caught colluding with the Russians and undermining President Obama's freezing of assets of the Russians, and he had to be fired after intense pressure. Then Palmer Report says no one even told him. Ben Carson, the head of the Housing and Urban Development Department, and a member of the cabinet, was not even told that his top advisor, Sir Michael Singleton, was fired without Carson's knowledge after it was discovered that he had criticized the orange dummy. And then we've got National Security Council Senior Director Craig Deere was fired for making fun of Trump behind his back. And, of course, we have to be irreverent. And we have to criticize this president. And then Corey Louie, the chief information security officer for the executive office of the president, was fired and escorted out of the building. He hasn't been heard from since. And the FBI cracked down as the FBI began investigating the Trump administration more vigorously. Six of his staffers, and I don't have their names, were all flagged by the FBI and escorted out of the building on the same day by the Secret Service. The CIA crackdown got Flynn's deputy, Robin Townley, fired. The CIA refused security clearance for that person. And then a mass resignation. 10 members of a presidential advisory commission simultaneously resigned, citing Trump's rampant racism. 10 members of the presidential advisory commission simultaneously resigned, citing Trump's rampant racism as the reason. And after just 8 days on the job, a Muslim staffer resigned. There's only so much you can hate your own self. And then we've already had a sex scandal, probably more than one, but we know of one. After A.J. Delgado alleged that Jason Miller got her pregnant during an affair, all y'all conservative Christians, listen up. He resigned from the White House communications director position. And she also bailed from the Trump administration. And Chris Christie, you know, he was the head of the transition team. That crook from New Jersey, one of the most corrupt public officials I've ever known of. He was the head of the transition team. And he was actually told he wasn't going to get a job in the administration. And all of Trump's nominees for the Secretary of the Army, Secretary of the Navy, and Secretary of Labor have now all withdrawn in controversy before they could be confirmed. Former CIA Director James Woolsey quit the Trump transition team, saying he no longer had a role. And then, of course, the Monday night massacre when Trump fired Acting Attorney General Sally Yates and the head of ICE, the Border Patrol, that's what they call the Border Patrol now. And Trump fired Ms. Yates after she tried to warn him about Flynn's connections to Russia. And now...
I thought he fired her after she refused to execute the immigration order, too.
You're right. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And then National Security Council spokesman Edward Price resigned due to Trump's antics. Brothers and sisters, friends and neighbors, you heard it right here on Resistance Radio, Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio, www.enlightenradio.org, www.enlightenradio.org, here on the Rock of Appalachia. We'll be back with you next week, 10 a.m. on Wednesday, with another great show. Thanks for tuning in. God bless you. God love you. Bless your little old pea-picking hearts, y'all.